The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. And let's go to Randy. Randy's in Ashland. Randy, good to have you on. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking that we're looking at an opportunity with the funding being cut off from the federal government, and the state may be looking for other ways of raising money for public education, mm-hmm. and they have the opportunity with the ONC Timber Act. Maybe they could start enforcing that, and that would, A, clean up our forests, create a bunch of jobs. And I remember the superintendent of schools that in Ashland saying, we'll never run out of money as long as we have the ONC timber revenue.
Boy, I'll tell you, it's great to hear some thinking like that. That would be, because essentially what you're looking at right now with all of the federal public lands right now, it's dead capital, right? It's essentially dead capital. Now, it may be growing, but it is essentially dead and unproductive, and it is a burden on the people right now. You're thinking that the reduction in federal contributions, so to speak, to state and local governments could actually spur some sharpening of the mind, I guess. Is that kind of where you're going with this?
Well, exactly. In other words, they're going to be in a pinch if Trump cuts off their revenue because of their idiot policies. And it's sitting there. It's still law. It's just that, you know.
Now, that is a federal law, though. The state really can't enforce the federal law, I don't believe, can it?
The thing is, the state is opposed to enforcing that law, and that's why it's not being enforced.
So that's the difference. So it would be the state then going to the environmental groups and saying, knock it off, jerks. Huh?
Well, we are the billionaire starving to death because we're refusing to buy food. We have wealth beyond wealth in our forests and under our feet, natural gas, oil, and the greenies say, oh, you can't touch that. You can't touch that because mm-hmm. it's changing the climate, which is, you and I know that's BS. It's not changing the climate. And so we're starving ourselves, going into debt because we're not harvesting the bounty of nature that's been given to us.
Good point. Randy, thanks for making it. 770-5633, we'll open up a line there. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Hey, Bill, it's Wild Salmon.
Steve, go ahead.
Well, one of my pet peeves is RVTD and their buses running around empty, and they're running on federal funds. And so I'm wondering what's going to happen with that. And you can't even try to trace it because they don't give you any financial information about them anymore.
Oh, they don't? Because I used to be able to look up their books and see what the cost. It's not there? Really?
It's not there. Yeah, no. But
that would not seem to be. I wonder if they just put it in a different place. That would strike me as incredibly illegal. RVTD may be run by some ideologues in some cases, but I don't think they're trying to break the law. You? I can't imagine why they wouldn't.
I don't think they care.
Well, all right.
Tim D'Alessandro was on the board, and I asked him a lot of questions, and he got really defensive, and then they took all that financial information off their webpage.
Oh, okay, because I used to be able to go and just get their yearly reports.
Yes.
And you could very easily then calculate what is your cost per passenger, as an example, and cost per passenger mile.
And that was exactly what I asked him. I told him, look, you could hire Uber drivers a lot cheaper. mm-hmm. Talk about head explosion.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I don't know if it's something that could be affected at a local issue, at a local level, but I would encourage RVTD to strip off all of their window coverings there, because not only is it designed, I think, to obscure the passengers or lack thereof that they may be bussing around, I also think it's about hiding the identity of people on the buses, and I would imagine law enforcement's not real happy about that.
Well, that's a good point. I just don't, and you can't even tell where the funding is coming from. It's ostensibly because of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Mm-hmm. That's how they justify all their expenses.
All right. Thanks for the call, and thank you for letting me know about that. And by the way, if somebody from RVTD can tell me, did they really hide the books now? You can't get it on the website any longer? Because you used to be able to figure out what was going on there. There was like a yearly report they would put up there. The last time I looked at it, I think it was like 2022 or 2023 numbers. Let me go to line three. Good morning. Hi, who's this? Welcome.
Yeah, this is David taking a second bite here in Phoenix. I just wanted to, in regards to our schools, Bill, that Rob Schlaffer thing, I guess it's supposed to be tonight.
The Oregon Education Project?
Tonight at 6 o'clock at the Mountain Church. Is that correct? I just want to make sure that...
I don't know. I'm not the clearinghouse for absolutely every event going on. Let me check this out. Let me see.
It was Rob Schlaffer, remember, with the school?
Well, no, I know Rob. I know Rob. I don't know if there's something going on at the Mountain Church tonight, though. Let me see. Let me see if I can do a... Education. I'm going to do a search in my emails and see if Oregon Education Project. Let me see what I've got going on here. I'm going to keep looking over the break.
Maybe he'll call in. Thank you very much for the show.
Yeah, I just don't know off the top of my head. Not every meeting or event that goes on, I don't have plugged in my head unless I guess I'm going to it. I know that tonight at 6 o'clock that there is the event going on with Diana Anderson doing her deal on the Zero Growth City plan that the planning groups want to push in here and a bunch more. Let me go to line four. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Good morning, Bill. Michael Shaw.
Hello, Michael.
I just want to remind people that we are only in day 31 of the Trump administration.
Mm-hmm.
They have uncovered tons of good information on wasteful spending, but it's only day 31. It's going to take time to put in the plans to fix it after it's all uncovered.
And I will agree with you. This is just the beginning of the beginning, you know, really, when it comes right down to it. The question is, though, what are the... I guess what I'm trying to, and what I'm still not completely knowledgeable about, that's why I was asking Rick about this a lot, is that there do seem to be a lot of misfires going on early, which I think hurt the cause. Would you agree with me on that? You know, when you fire the nuclear workers at Hanford, as an example, you know, and, oh, now I got to get them back, you know, those sort of things. How would you handle something like that?
I understand, but in terms of hunting words, it's using a shotgun, not a rifle.
Right.
And when you've got a shotgun approach, you're going to have pellets that fly left, right, up, and down. You agree?
Yes. In other words, prepare for chaos.
Yeah, and as Rick said, you can fix these things once you've taken the shot, but it's going to take time. I hear so many people talking about, well, it really hasn't happened, and this hasn't happened, and that's going on. It's only day 31.
All right. Point well taken. Thank you very much. 770-5633. If you're on hold, I will get right to you. This is the Bill Myers Show. We have open phones here for a little bit. And 770-5633. We'll do it right after the Hannity update and more. Come on.
Joel here at Butherford and Truck Center. And you know how I spell transparency? INVOICE. Invoice, as in how we now post the invoice on
770-KMED.
728. Happy to take your calls. By the way, I wanted to give you some confirmation. David from Phoenix was asking, hey, is that Oregon Education Project meeting at the Mountain Church going on tonight? And I dug back through the thousands of emails, and I did find the one from Russ Kautz. Kautz, a couple of weeks ago they were going to have had one on the 7th, and they delayed it to the 14th, and they changed it. It is going to be tonight at 6 o'clock at the Mountain Church. So if you're into Oregon Education Project reform, you want to be at that meeting on the Mountain Church, at Mountain Church, rather. And then also we have the planning. Diana Anderson's meeting over at the Central Point Library. That's going to be 6 o'clock tonight. So we got dueling meetings. Kind of depends on what you are more interested into. And by the way, I am going to put the Zoom link on that up on social media a little bit later on the Facebook page, okay? 729 at KMED. Gene's here. Hello, Gene. Are you crazy or not today for Friday? What do you say?
Now what?
Crazy or what?
I am partly crazy, but I don't
Good.
Stick to a whole one thing. I sometimes switch back and forth.
Good. So what's on your mind?
Well, I was just thinking about Charles Haptas' book about pole shift, and that said so in the Egyptian...
Okay, one more time. Slow down, because it's not... You're going Conspiracy Theory Thursday on me on Friday, and I'm not ready for it, okay? So pole shift, all right?
Yeah.
So you're talking about the shift of the magnetic poles of the Earth. This has happened several times over time.
Oh, yeah.
Over the eons.
But I'm thinking that the environmentalists seem to think that we're causing stuff like this, but there's something much greater than us in charge of all this.
Hmm. It could be everything from solar temperatures, solar activity. There's also the magnetic field of the Earth. A lot of things influence climate, right?
Oh yes, mm-hmm. Naturally. Yes, it does. And the Egyptian Book of the Dead stated that while they were sailing away from Atlantis as it was destroying itself, that the sun used to rise in the west and then it come up in the east while they were going through this catastrophe.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, I think what we need to do is get in touch with our Lemurian friends that are deep within the bowels of Mount Shasta, according to the New Agers a number of years ago, and see what they have to say about this, okay?
The Aleutians blew them up. They're now the Pacific Ocean, but they used to be Lemuria.
Oh, got it. Got it. All right. Thank you, Gene. I don't know if it's crazy or just... let me just put in an alternative reality. Let me go to Dave. Line three. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Good morning. This is Jerry.
Hi, Jerry. What's on your mind, huh?
Well, so you mentioned something about the federal government running bus lines or being a big part of that. And you happened to mention that because that's federal, the states couldn't do anything with those laws or enforce them.
Well, what I'm saying this is that it's the same sort of thing where you can't, just like the state cannot technically enforce an immigration law. Courts have pretty much made that. It's a matter of the ONC Act is not a state law. That's a act of Congress.
The thing about the immigration thing being the federal government, so is the Department of Transportation. That's a constitutional duty of the government is the interstate transportation. Yet every state enforces, they pass identical laws to the feds, and they enforce those laws. And they just do. They enforce federal law.
Mm-hmm.
Every truck out there is subject to federal laws, but if they get a ticket for breaking the federal law, it's the state that does it. It's the state that
The enforcement method. However, I... Well, first of all, you would have to, when you're talking about enforcing the ONC Act, and believe me, hey, I would love to see it happen because it's been ignored for a long, long time.
Yeah.
For even the states to be able to do this, though, you would have to get people like Merkley and Ron Wyden out of the way, because that essentially, they, along with all of the other Democratic West Coast senators, have kept a lot of that locked up.
Well, if it's the law, the state should be able to enforce it just like they do the transportation laws.
Well, go ahead and try, and then all I'm saying is that you're assuming, A, the state would want to, which I doubt it would, given the point of view, and like I said, there are a few moving parts in this one. I'm not trying to just completely trash what you're talking about, but it's like, yeah, the law also says you're not supposed to be able to function in our society as an illegal alien, but look how what reality is. There's the law, and then there's the enforcement action of it. I just don't want to be the simplistic thinker type of, all we have to do is get out in the woods. And, you know, and we've had a lot of Republican politicians that would run on this sort of stuff for a long time, and I understand because, you know, they'll take a look at it. We got all this wealth around us, so what we got to do is run on that. Yeah, and it's it ain't yours. It ain't your club, I guess is what I'm getting at this point. I would much prefer that rather than us worrying about getting out into the woods, I would actually sell those lands out. I want those lands out of public ownership.
Well, here's part of the problem is the judges are doing enforcing the laws, and they're enforcing the environmental laws falsely because they obviously don't work.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let me go to Dave. Dave, you get the final say. Morning.
Yeah,
right now.
Adam Schiff is in trouble because he got a refinancing on property in Connecticut where he claimed it to be his primary resident. But then he
he's a senator in,
down here in
other words, he has a Ron Wyden problem, in other words.
Yeah, he has the Ron Wyden problem, but Ron Wyden never got a mortgage because his wife is filthy rich. So he's not tied into a lie where, it's against the law because he was doing it to get cheaper interest rates on the property by saying it would be his primary residence.
Well, you know how he gets away from this. He says, okay, he falls on his sword and says, okay, I lied about this to get a better interest rate. And then, he's not going to be removed as senator, if that's what you're implying.
No, but he could end up in prison. That's a federal crime to lie on a mortgage application under penalty of perjury.
Uh-huh. How many other people are going to prison for perjury, though? I'm just trying to get you to think realistically about that. All right?
Donald Trump almost did.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, but that's just it. The system wanted Donald Trump in prison. The system doesn't want Adam Schiff in prison at this point. Okay?
Well, we'll see. Cash Patel can bring it forth and then see what Pam, the Attorney General, does.
What Pam Bondi has to say. Get the popcorn. That's all I can say. All right. Thank you very much.
Right.
And believe me, nothing would actually delight me more than to see that lying POS get his comeuppance. But I don't know. California seems to like that flavor of lying, I guess. It's a 737.
If you're remodeling, your level will also increase to 6,000 feet, causing snow melt. Most of the rain will be to our north. Bill London, KMED.
So they're putting a toolkit on for gender-affirming care. But wait a minute. There are no tools because the whole idea of gender-affirming care is that they're removed, right? Or am I wrong about that? But this is the state of Oregon, though. Well, maybe we'll talk about that or maybe not. I don't know. It's 20 before 8 here on the Bill Myers Show. Price of gold is getting really, really close to about $3,000 an ounce. And yep, it is doing what it's doing, protecting people. Thousands of years of experience of protecting wealth during tumultuous times, whether it is destruction of the dollar, the printing, central banks that can't be trusted to get control of things, war, pestilence, people thinking mean thoughts. Okay, I'm just kidding about that part about it. But anyway, where you go to buy or sell gold, it's very important around here. And support the recognized experts, if you would, please. That's Jay Austin and Company, gold and silver buyers in Ashland, 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass, 1632 Ashland Street in Ashland. And right now, when you're looking at almost $3,000 gold, it's time to take a look around the house and maybe you have some scrap gold. Could be everything from old jewelry you're not going to wear any longer. Maybe it has diamonds embedded in it and all that stuff. And by the way, Jay Austin is more than happy to take care of that. A lot of places will not take scrap gold that have other stones embedded in it. But hey, they'll make you a fair offer on that. And they support talk radio and they support freedom and liberty and people like us getting together to talk about it. So I hope you'll support them. 1632 Ashland Street in Ashland, 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass, fortunereserve.com. That is Jay Austin.
If you're remodeling your house,
to meet friends or make some, Freddy's Diner in Old Town Eagle Point.
I'm Tony Dusty with Dusty's Transmissions, and I'm on KMED.
A lot of minds sharpened and focused on the homelessness situation, especially in the city of Grants Pass, given the multiple lawsuits that seem to be filed. And it's like, you got a week? What's the latest? What's the latest that is being filed? But a lot of people working on some of these problems. And I got an email yesterday from Jeremy Ford. And Jeremy Ford ended up bringing up to me a Built for Zero initiative. And I know nothing about this, so I'm going to talk with him about this. Anybody that may have a potential solution to where we find ourselves, I want to talk to him. Jeremy, welcome to the show. Good having you on.
Thank you very much. I've got Pastor Kevin Darr with us here, too. He's working tirelessly with us with this Built for Zero model also.
Okay. And first off, so who is with you this morning?
Pastor Kevin Darr. He's the senior pastor of U Turn for Christ.
Okay, great. Wonderful. And are you sharing a phone together, or I'm just...
We are. We're conferencing this.
Oh, excellent. Glad to know that here. And you're going to be getting together with some city officials later today about Built for Zero. Would that be fair? Is that what we're looking at right now?
Yeah, that's exactly what we're doing. A couple of weeks back, we kind of presented the model to a lot of the nonprofits, some of the city council members. We've been in talks with the mayor and the city council and other people. And this is a model that's working in other cities, other counties, Kern County, Bakersfield, for instance. They reached Function Zero. And what Function Zero is, where homelessness is brief, rare, and non-occurring anymore. Hmm. And they've reached it for two populations, actually. That's for chronic homelessness and also veterans homelessness. Gulfport, Mississippi is another community that reached Function Zero for homelessness across the board. That's veteran homelessness, chronic homelessness. Matter of fact, since 2015, all the way up till now, they've maintained Function Zero for veteran homelessness. They've also reached Function Zero for chronic homelessness, single males, youth, and women with children also. Cities like Houston, Texas have seen a 63% reduction rate in their homelessness. And so with everything going on and how polarized it is right now and here in Grants Pass, a couple months back, we decided to take a look at what we can do. We're very much been rooted in the community since 2017 and with addiction recovery. But we've seen a need. We've seen a way that we could possibly help the community. And we are looking to bring this model here. I think within the next 45 to 60 days, we should have a stabilization center where we can bring all the nonprofits from medical health to mental health to case management to substance use, whether it's U Turn for Christ, Gospel Rescue Mission, the Oxford House, or, AA, or different types of.
Okay. Hey, Jeremy, let me ask Pastor Kevin. Now, Pastor Kevin, you're the senior pastor at Calvary Chapel, right? Grants Pass?
Right.
Okay. How does this proposal then differ from, let's say, what already exists in Grants Pass, a Gospel Rescue Mission as an example? Because everything about one of the biggest challenges that I'm told from the homeless community, as it were, is that if there are rules involved, you get a lot of people that just don't even come in. So how would you then seeing this zero program work out? What makes it different?
Well, there's quite a bit of difference. One is this is the homelessness issue here in Grants Pass, especially has been going on for a long time, as we know. In fact, probably 2 years ago, I sat down with you in your Grants Pass studio, and we talked about homelessness. And the difference is this is a collaborative approach. We as an organization, as U Turn for Christ, a nonprofit, we've been out pulling people out of homelessness for a long time, but it's been on a small scale. We have guys who were once homeless and addicted or had mental illness who are now, have their children back, who are housed, who are productive members of society. And since then, what we've done is we've taken a look at what we were doing as a community, and it's just not working. The low barrier approach, where we don't set milestones or have certain almost a certain contract for behaviors and getting better, just hasn't worked. If people are going to live up to or down to their expectations you have of them. And our goal here is to collaborate with all of the nonprofits and governmental agencies with the common goal of removing the barriers so that people can become self-sufficient. Because all the barrier housing or living does is it produces more dependency on addiction, on the government support or whatever. And our goal is to set them free from that in the sense of becoming self-sufficient, where they're not reliant on, that we can set them free from mental illness issues, addiction issues.
Okay. Now, do you have your own in-house addiction recovery services, or is this the part about where you have the other nonprofits that come in? And what is the church then just a focal point or a staging ground? I'm just trying to figure out how this looks, and I'm sorry to ask a dumb question. Okay.
Well, so all that is, that's pretty simple. Is we're a bunch of guys who are kind of boots on the ground and have been, and we just saw a need for people to come together. So us. As you turn for Christ, what we see, and we truly believe that the true answer to all that ails humanity is Jesus Christ. But we also understand that that's not everybody's cup of tea. And as you were saying, like the Gospel Rescue Mission, we work closely with them now because we have kind of the same mindset. But we understand that, there are those who are not at that place. So there are secular recovery centers. There's all these different places. And what we want to do is bring someone in, assess what their needs are. If they want a faith-based recovery, we could send them to U-Turn or the Gospel Rescue Mission. If they want something that's more secular, we can send them to one of their. What it is we assess their needs. If they're a veteran, we'll hook them up with the VA, the whole point of the stabilization center that Jeremy was talking about is to have all of these organizations in one spot where we can assess them and then determine what's needed and then require them to follow the steps necessary to, that we can help them remove the barrier so that homelessness is not something that's a constant in their life.
All right, Pastor Kevin. So what is happening this afternoon with getting together with city council officials? What's the story there, and is this meeting open to the public?
Absolutely. It's open to anybody who has a heart to see this issue be resolved in our community. It's we have everything from vendors that produce housing for temporary housing to whoever. All the people, all the players who are going to be a part of it are going to be there, but it's open. Last time we probably had, Jeremy, about 130 people that showed up at the meeting. And, it's just kind of to give a progression of how far we've been, what connections we've made, where this is going.
How are you funded?
So it's all private. One of our goals that Jeremy and myself set out is that, one, U-Turn for Christ has never accepted a penny from any government, from state or local or federal funds.
That also means you don't have to operate within their restrictions either. So there's a great thing to have federal dollars or state dollars coming in, but there are usually pretty big strings attached, wouldn't you say? Usually.
Exactly. And we couldn't be who we are as U-Turn for Christ if we accepted the funds. It just wouldn't happen. Mm. But so exactly. And we don't think, we think the taxpayers have been burdened enough with this issue. And we think there's other ways of doing this. Plus, our goal, because we don't take any governmental funds, is to literally work ourselves out of a job, so to speak, as it relates to the homelessness.
I must say, Pastor Kevin, that would be great to shut it down when the time comes. We can't find any more drug addicted homeless here. That would be a wonderful thing. Of course, I don't know. It could be human nature being what it is. We do seem to be minting additional people. By the way, Jeremy, I forgot to ask you when you first came in, what is your connection with this? What is your role within the Built for Zero initiative?
So I initially was the one who started looking into solutions to see what models were working in other cities. And so I found this and I presented it to Pastor Kevin, and we so far have just been presenting it to other nonprofits and other, and we presented it to the mayor, the city council. They love it. A lot of the other nonprofits love it because it's something that's worked. And what's cool about Built for Zero is it comes from the standpoint that homelessness is solvable. And one of the things that we're going to be working with too is preventative measures. What's going to prevent people from moving into homelessness? And that's one of the issues that I don't think's been explored a lot. We've thrown a lot of money. We've had a lot of talk in town about doing things, but
yeah, well, yeah, and it's really hard to fix it after someone's already broken, right? That kind of thing.
Right. Hmm. Yeah, and let's face it, some of these organizations and entities are not in the business to get rid of homelessness because their bottom line requires that homelessness exists in order to be funding. Like Pastor Kevin said, we're not in this for any type of funding. We've never received funding. And like Pastor Kevin said, our goal is to make sure that the taxpayers are not burdened anymore. There's private funding out there that's available to do this. And if it's worked in big cities like Houston, Gulf Coast, Mississippi, Chattanooga, Tennessee, and Rockford, Illinois, it definitely can work here in Grants Pass.
All right. And meeting today at 3 o'clock, and where is that going on? And what should people expect to see when they pop by?
So it will be at Calvary Chapel, Grants Pass, and it's at 3 o'clock. And, you know, Jeremy and I and a couple of other stakeholders will just be presenting kind of the overall structure of Built for Zero and starting to set up a stakeholders group, you know, kind of to be able to steer this initiative of local officials and that kind of stuff. So we're starting to develop the organization behind it, and then also to kind of give some more vision on where it's going.
And where is Calvary Chapel, for those who don't know?
It's 269 West Harbeck Road in Grants Pass.
Okay, West Harbeck Road in Grants Pass. Hey, Jeremy, Pastor Kevin, I appreciate you both. Thanks for sharing. And keep me in the room, keep me in the loop on how that's working, because anything which could help stay clear of the lawsuits and help return the city of Grants Pass to, you know, getting some more people productive and off the streets, I think would be very helpful. Anything you can bring to it, okay? Thanks so much,
absolutely,
both of you.
Awesome. Thanks, Bill.
All right.
Absolutely. If I could say one more thing is that
sure.
The new mayor and the city council are very much concerned with this issue. They're not trying to push it under the rug or make it go away. They're actually in the business of trying to solve this. For a lot of people in the community don't think so. And we've been in conversations with the city council and the mayor, and they very much have a heart for these people that are in house, and they very much want to see this problem solved in this town and this community also.
All right. Thank you very much, Jeremy and Pastor Kevin.
Thank you, sir.
Be well. 757 at KMED and 99.3 KPXG. That is, private people trying to come up with some solutions to this. I'm all good for this. That is one of the challenges when we try to offload is the term I'm thinking of charity, you know, trying to take care of people who are in crisis and certainly need help. And we offshore it offload it onto to government. And then you have the government funding, and then you have the growth of the nonprofit organizations that are dependent on the government funding. And it's kind of like how we jokingly say, does the American Cancer Society really want cancer to be cured? Because ultimately it means you're all out of work. Now, I know they'll say that we're working for research and everything, but there's always that kind of work. It's just sort of the way that bureaucracies tend to find ways to preserve themselves, I guess. So anyway, when they say that they would like to put themselves out of business, good. that would be a good thing that everyone was doing okay in the cities. It's 7:58 and change at KMED. I'll tell you what, I have a Diner 62 Real American Quiz that I am just jonesing to give you a shot at right now, and to get yourself a $20 gift certificate from Diner 62. We're going to be talking a little bit of history from this week, and it'll be a lot of fun. It's always a lot of fun. It's multiple choice. 770-563-3770-KMED. If you have not won this in the last 60 days, you can play it next, all right, on The Bill Myers Show.
This is Brent.
This is KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass. Time for the Diner 62 Real American Quiz. By the way, two pork chops and eggs or 8-ounce New York steak and eggs on special right now on the weekends, and good stuff. And remember, today is Clam Chowder Friday. It's homemade there. So good, you will hear the surf and seagulls Okay. I love that claim, all right? Diner 62, just south of White City. And they're just doing great work. Great food over there. Let me go to line one here and see if we can get a winner. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Good morning, Bill. This is Jerry from Rogue River.
Hey, Jerry from Rogue River. You'd like a Diner 62 quiz prize, wouldn't you, huh?
I would love to go eat there.
All right. Well, it was today in 1948, Jerry, in Rogue River. NASCAR is officially going into business. NASCAR racing goes on to become one of America's most popular spectator sports, as well as a multi-billion dollar industry. And the driving force behind NASCAR was Bill France Sr. He was a mechanic and auto repair shop owner from Washington, D.C., who in the mid-1930s moved to Daytona Beach. And the Daytona area was a gathering spot for all the racing enthusiasts. And France started, he got involved in racing cars. And after witnessing how racing rules could vary from event to event and how dishonest promoters would steal the prize money, France felt that they needed a governing body to promote racing and sanction it. So he gets a bunch of his buddies in the racing community to talk about the idea, and NASCAR was born. Now, France served as NASCAR's first president, played a key role in shaping its development in the sport's early decades. Now, for the win, Jerry and Rogue River, in what city did NASCAR hold its first strictly stock car race? Was it A, Daytona Beach, Florida, B, Darlington, South Carolina? Was it C, Charlotte, North Carolina, D, Martinsville, Virginia, or was it E, Winston-Salem, North Carolina? What do you think? It's one of those five. Good luck on that one, okay? I missed this one, but I tried to guess, okay?
Very beginning. All right, let's say Darlington.
Darlington, South Carolina. That sounds pretty good. I'm sorry, Jerry, it wasn't that. But we'll keep going here to line two. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Brian.
Hey, Brian. Not Darlington. Where did NASCAR hold its first stock car race? Was it Daytona Beach, Charlotte, North Carolina, Martinsville, Virginia, or Winston-Salem, North Carolina?
Charlotte.
Charlotte. You're going for C, Charlotte.
Yeah.
Good day.
You're a winner!
You nailed it. NASCAR's race first held February 15, 1948 on the Beach Road course in Daytona Beach, but the first NASCAR strictly stock car race held June 19, 1949 at Charlotte Speedway. The strictly stock race, a 200-lap event, only allowed American passenger cars built between 1946 and 1949. So that's pretty cool. It's interesting. There were 13,000 people that watched Glenn Dunaway finish the 200-lap race first. However, Jim Roper, who drove a Lincoln, collected the $2,000 prize because Dunaway was disqualified for illegal rear springs on his vehicle. I guess everyone was trying to work some kind of advantage, right? And in the early years of NASCAR, they drove the same type of cars that regular folks drove on the streets. Buicks, Caddies, Oldsmobile, with a few modifications. That's about it. So, hey, you're off the Diner 62. Hang on. I'll get you all set up. Good stuff. Hang on. I'll need your address, and we'll pop that out to you, all right? 6 minutes after 8 here, and we'll be back with Dr. John Lott here in just a moment. I think it's going to be some pretty good conversation. What should Kash Patel be doing now that he's taking reins at the FBI? And he has a lot to say about the way crime statistics are gathered. It's what he wants to focus on. I'll kick that around with him after the Kim Commando digital update.
K4VIN 0.